right out of the gate here, a lot of people will look at you in studio with us and look at this as we're flattered, but as a bad sign. Would you agree with that?
Well, if we had a deal and I was in studio,
be great.
I think I'd be in a better position. Sure. I don't think, today is a Jewish holiday, and virtually everybody involved in this negotiation other than myself is celebrating the Jewish holiday. So it was going to be not a day that was going to be a negotiation day anyway. I had some work to do in Toronto with some of the officiating issues we're dealing with in connection with the lockout. So I'll use the opportunity to talk to the media.
Are you surprised that there was a lockout? There is a lockout? Did you see it coming as an inevitability?
It depends on what point in time we're talking. I mean, it was certainly, I don't even remember when the last time I was in here, but maybe it was early summer, late spring or whatever. I would have hoped at that point in time we would have had made more progress over the summer than we did. But we didn't, so got to keep at it.
Bill, is probably as late as what, 2005, 2006, when we came out of that lockout, and we know how hard the guys fought to avoid a salary cap, but you guys won. You got your cap. It's a multi-tiered cap system that, you know, was supposed to enable the owners to have stability. And Gary mentioned it. Gary, you know, talked about as late as 2006 that now we have stability. And now we have the system that will enable us to have 30 healthy franchises.
Cost certainty.
My question to you is, what happened between then and now? Why are we going through this again?
Well, I think the system itself is something we think has actually worked very, very well. I think it's made our league more competitive than it's ever been. I think the product is as good as it's ever been. I think the revenues we've been able to generate kind of are a testament to the fact that the system itself works very, very well. As it's turned out, 57% of the revenue is going to the players is too high.
But why wasn't it too
sustainable
high in 2005? Well, I think why was it great?
First of all, it was, if you remember, Nick, and you do, we didn't come back at 57% of the revenues. We came
54.
Back at 54.
Okay.
It grew to 57 over time. Bottom line is we missed on that. It turned out to be too much. It was too good a deal at the time. But there are other things that have happened in 7 years, as always happen over time, that can make it more difficult. Before we came on air, you know, the fact that the Canadian currency went from, you know, 75 cents to $1.03 is one of those reasons. But it's also a lot more expensive to do business today. There's also a lot of other costs that are associated with running hockey franchises that don't get accounted for. The economy went south in 2008. That's something
that didn't affect us really, because the revenues grew at record rates.
No, but arguably, you don't know what they would have grown at if there wasn't an economic downturn, right? I mean, you're arguing that we were able to survive the economic downturn. We were, and we were able to continue to grow revenues. But who knows how much we would have grown them in the absence of an economic downturn?
So Bill, I look at the league and I say, okay, we've got approximately 9 franchises that do extremely well. They make money year to year pretty consistently. From my history of sitting in those meetings and looking at what teams were, you know, where their revenues were, where their expenses were, there was approximately 9 teams that did exceptionally well. The next 10 or so, if they have a great playoff run, make money, break even. And if they don't, they lose money. And then there's the bottom 10 maybe or so, and I could be 8 to 10 in each category, that are disasters. So as a league, first of all, tell me if I'm wrong on that. And secondly, how do you fix it when you really only have 9 great franchises? Is it just the players? Is it, I mean, the 50-50 or 46? How do you fix it when you have such few really good franchises?
Well, by the way, there may be fewer than even 9, okay. if you're talking about you know, really profitable franchises, and that's one of the things, you know, we focused on in terms of needing to change the division of revenues. But you know, that, you know, one of the ways you deal with that is the revenue sharing program that we've created and which we have proposed to expand in meaningful ways to include teams that don't currently get it. We've addressed the clawback issue, which you're familiar with, Doug, where, you know, if a club isn't performing locally as well as it should, we actually decrease their revenue sharing.
Right.
Again,
which has happened to a few teams,
you know,
hasn't it?
We're focused on yeah, sure, certainly has, and it's probably exacerbated their situation and their losses. Yeah. Again, it was the way the system was designed to work, to really incentivize them to maximize revenues locally.
Yeah.
But, you know, part of our proposal going forward, and I think actually we're probably on the same page with the Players Association about this, is becoming more active with those franchises, really trying to understand why they're not generating revenues the way they should generate revenues, and working with them mm-hmm. to improve their business operations.
Just one other thing. If and correct me if I'm wrong on this, if I'm with X franchise and I can afford to spend $40 million on player costs and I receive $10 million, $12 million, whatever it is in revenue sharing, to get me to $52 million. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So that means you can spend $52 million to try to be competitive,
right?
What happens when they spend $63 million? Whose fault is that? Is that the player's fault? Is that management's fault? I mean, who? And that's happening. I'm looking at teams that, with their revenue sharing, can afford to go to 50. They're getting their revenue sharing piece to get them to the floor, and then they spend $12 million more on players. Whose fault is that?
Well,
the players? Yeah, why do the players have to be responsible? To,
but they're not. But let's well, let's
I guess
no,
if
let's go.
A 7% pay cut
Let's talk about that though,
yeah.
Because
and
what
I,
we're
I'm
agreeing,
not trying to understand it.
But we're agreeing to pay the players a certain percentage of our revenues. That's a fixed dollar amount, right? So so there's not
so it doesn't matter.
Exactly. It's an allocational issue, right? Some clubs may spend poorly to 63. Other clubs may believe their opportunity to be successful and to actually generate their revenues is to pay to 63 to win a Stanley Cup.
Right.
So, and unfortunately, they're more often wrong than right.
99.9% of the time.
You've seen in the league. So those happen, but that's why you need the tight bands. That's why you need the restrictions that we've asked for to try to keep those situations from happening.
Presently, Bill, it is a flawed system because there is some incentive not to spend one extra dollar so you can save one extra dollar or make one extra dollar with the revenue sharing. Is that fair to say?
No.
No?
I'm not getting it. Below the midpoint.
Staying below, not being aggressive, so you can hit your targets, so you can maximize your revenue share.
I don't think it's worked that way, only because that second tranche of revenue sharing you're talking about hasn't been available to most clubs in most years. In other words, you can't really plan from a business perspective to ever receive that second tranche of revenue sharing.
Yeah. Although the CFO is, I and my CFO used to try to figure that out all the time to try to capitalize. Okay, so Bill, just to help me with this, if the top 10 teams contribute to revenue sharing, what is the most a team gives in revenue sharing in the NHL?
Like
and what's
team.
The bottom?
I mean, historically? I mean, you know it comes from a variety of sources.
I know it comes from a variety of sources.
Yeah.
But for X team, the number one team, or like what do they actually have to contribute of their bottom line to revenue sharing? What's the most? It was $10 million. When it originally started, it was $10 million, all the way down to number 10 team was like $400,000 or $500,000, if I recall.
It probably historically has been as high. Again, are you taking into account the playoff gate tax? Are you
yeah.
taking
I'm
into
talking
account
in everything
the,
that comes out
escrow
of the
distribution?
I'm taking whatever comes out of the team's bottom line.
And then there's you know, just recently has become relevant. We've always had the ability to take the first tranche of revenue sharing out of centrally generated revenues above $300 million.
Right.
We haven't been in a position to fund revenue sharing with that until recently.
Because
So it's hard for me to answer that question.
Okay, when we started revenue sharing, was it not the number one team gave $10 million to the bottom team, The number two, 9 million. And it went all the way down to about 400,000, 500,000?
It's not that formulaic, and it's very complicated because there's also a cap on what you can contribute if you're in the top 10.
Okay.
In other words, you can't be asked to contribute more than 20% of the overall pool you were getting from the top 10. Again, though, okay. A lot of the issues you're raising now were addressed in our most recent revenue sharing model.
What's the total
proposal?
Pot?
Okay,
what's so the that's total not pot? An issue.
The pot this past year is about 100, north of 150 million, and under our proposal to the Players Association was closer to 200 million.
Okay.
Bill, a lot of fans in the last couple of weeks have watched some pretty big contracts being handed out. Evander Kane, the latest, I think, at 31.5. One of your chairmen, on obviously the negotiating committee, Jacobs as well, Sagan, Lucic. Sagan got a 6-year deal. You guys have been trying to negotiate for a 5-year maximum contract. Jacobs gives a 6-year out. Can you see how ridiculous that looks to the fans?
Yes.
Really difficult for, like, do not go back to these guys and go, you're embarrassing me here. It's embarrassing.
That's been said in meetings I've sat in. So in fairness,
now look,
how can they
individual
ask you to do what you do with a straight face?
The collective mindset, right? It's really the league's job to negotiate a collective bargaining agreement that's going to work for all of us. As long as you have a current system and we're entitled to do this and it's going to make us more competitive and may lead to competitive success, they're going to do what they can do under the current rules. It is what it is.
Millard, McLean, Kypreos here, Hockey Central at noon on this Monday, along with Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly in studio with us. Day 2 of the National Hockey League's lockout 2012. Said on Friday night during our lockout special, the fact that we have to title lockouts now, the lockout of 2012, as opposed to 1994 is a bad thing. Bill, a couple of housekeeping things to do. Are you going to talk? No talks today.
Is this the third question or the second?
We gave him 4 in total.
Oh, so I thought it was 2.
He's burning one right now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So much to the cap.
When will you guys meet again?
We're supposed to talk tomorrow early evening to discuss that. I would hope we get together this week.
Is that to negotiate or is that just to set up meetings?
It's really to talk through. Look, we've Steve Fear and I had lunch on Saturday, talked about a lot of the issues we're dealing with in negotiations and really kind of generate ideas to how to move this forward. We continued that discussion yesterday on the phone, and, you know, we're supposed to talk again tomorrow afternoon.
Is Gary scheduled to come to Toronto tomorrow?
No.
No.
Okay. Bill, if we go to 50-50 split and $200 million in revenue sharing, so a $200 million revenue sharing program and a 50-50 split of revenues, and the other housekeeping things like entry level, we can fix that. We can fix unrestricted.
Well, has there been any talk
can I finish? Can I finish? Does that, in fact, finally fix the deadbeat franchises in this league? Does that fit? And again, the players are taking a haircut. Revenue sharing goes up. The owners are, both sides are contributing. It's shared sacrifice. A 50-50, $200 million revenue sharing. Does that fix the franchises?
I think we can come up with a collective bargaining agreement combined with a revenue sharing program that gives clubs an ability to be stable and competitive and financially successful. Whether that means break even or whether that means they make a small profit, I don't know. But at least they're not paying large losses every year.
So you're telling me 50-50 and $200 million in revenue sharing would get you close to that?
I didn't buy into your premise. I said there is a deal to be done.
There is a number.
That can do that.
Okay. Max, under the impression that everything else can be fixed in 5 minutes once you're past the money. I don't think it's that easy. I think that
I agree with you.
If you look at your loopholes that you left open in 2005 or 2006, a lot of the problems stem from probably the fact that you guys took free agency from 31 and made it 7 years complete, right?
Bro. Mm-hmm.
My question to you now is, Gary made the gave everybody the impression that there was a bit of a stall tactic from the PA for the last few months. Why haven't you guys been able to talk about those things outside of the money issue, the kickback, the rollback, or the percentages coming down? Why couldn't you have pushed that to the side and say, okay, let's talk free agency, let's talk about salary arb, let's talk about average cap hits?
Well, we've done some of that, but I don't think those issues necessarily can be separated from the overall economic issues. I think those are important issues. I happen to believe they're allocational issues. They're not, again, it goes back to the nature of our system. We're agreeing to pay a certain amount of money to the players.
Doesn't
period,
matter
right?
what happens to those. You only get 50% of the revenue.
Right.
Doesn't matter. That's why they can be solved.
Is that money going to the right players? That's really all that issue is. Right. That's all salary arb is. That's all free agency, because the amount of money going to players as a group is going to be fixed.
So why do you say it can't be fixed quickly then? Those other issues.
Well,
you said
because
you agreed with them.
I know they do feel strongly about it. My view of those issues in 2004, 2005 was, look, it's the players. We're agreeing to pay the players a certain amount of money. They should determine where it goes. It should be up to them to determine that. We should have almost no say in it. Probably not that strong, but clearly that was the mind bent. I think our managers have convinced me over 7 years that there is actually a misallocation of dollars that the system is creating, and that alone doesn't bother me. The fact that it's a misallocation that may be affecting the product and may be treating certain groups of players unfairly, that once it affects the product, then it's something that concerns the league and we should at least talk about.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't matter whether it's entry level 3 or 5 years. It doesn't matter when unrestricted free agency is. They're still only getting 50% of the pie. That's
the
why it's not very complicated to fix the other element.
What's the second biggest issue beyond the allocation, 50-50 or 52-48?
I'd say some of the system issues. But look, you're asking me what my second most important
issue
is. I think the players may have different views of,
what's,
of what's important. Some of the system issues. I think clearly the ability to address some of the contracts that we believe
like
aren't
length of
consistent
contract?
With the purpose and intent of our system, what some of our managers call cheat contracts, what Brian Burke would call cheat contracts.
Bill, as a lawyer, do you go back and sit there and go, oh, God, how could we have been so not
dumb?
Dumb.
No, I don't. I actually think there's a lot of the things that have happened.
I'm glad you used it before
under
I did.
This collective agreement weren't unanticipated. I think clearly the phony years at the end of contracts to lower their value. That's me saying that. It was probably unanticipated. So I wish I could have closed that off, but I don't think that, again, I don't think the system as a whole is all that broken. I think some minor adjustments and it'll be fine.
So are you closer or farther apart than you were at this stage in 04, 05?
Well, it's a totally different negotiation, right? We hadn't really negotiated over anything in 04, 05 at this point. I mean, the issue was until we were talking a cap system or not a cap system, on one side or the other agreed to the other's position, there was no negotiation, really. This is a totally different negotiation, at least at this point. The Players Association has said they'll maintain the cap, and it's an economic negotiation. So in my view, on that front, it's a much simpler negotiation.
So it's positive.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Bill, how much, because of the troubled franchises in the NHL, because of the real troubled franchises, how much of a drain is that on the league? And how much should the players really pay for that? Because there's troubled franchises that you guys are intent on not moving. After watching this Phoenix fiasco for 3 or 4 years, where, of course, we've had our differences on that. But you're intent on not moving bad franchises. And
well, they did move one.
You're reluctant to do it,
Because I was going to take issue with the intent. If a market doesn't work long term and is given an opportunity, then you have to make a decision on the market.
But
you move to a different market.
Phoenix haven't made money since they went to Phoenix. What's your idea of term? They haven't made money 1 year they've been in Phoenix.
A whole host of reasons for that, Doug, including the fact that we've owned the franchise for 3 years. So, I mean, again, we aren't at a point where we're willing to call Phoenix a failure.
You're not.
No, we're not.
They lose $30 million a year, roughly. When's a failure hit?
I suppose it depends on how you define losses.
The one issue I have right now on the way you guys are blanketing, obviously, your negotiation, one team, 30 teams, everybody benefits. But, whatever it is, maybe it is six or eight teams, but you're negotiating now and you're asking the players to take a 10% haircut and you're turning around and you're going to give 10% of that money to the Leafs, to Montreal.
No, that's not true.
That's not true.
That's not true.
But they'll benefit.
It's going to the lesser team.
They'll benefit.
No, they'll benefit, sure. They'll benefit.
But they don't need a benefit.
They won't benefit.
They're doing great.
They won't benefit.
They're doing great. They don't need any more money.
And they'll also contribute more in revenue sharing.
Yeah.
All of it. They should... They don't need help right now. You don't need to fight for them. Well, you don't need to fight for
them. Nick, just a minute, Nick.
You need to fight for 10, 12 other teams.
Just a minute, Nick. When somebody pays $533 million for 37.5% of MLSE, they are entitled to make a return on their investment.
They already are.
So you can't say that
they
shouldn't make any more money. You can't cap profits. So
I just think that we need to focus on those bottom 10 teams
get rid of them.
I think you're if it was just a handful of franchises that are representing our issues, then I buy into let's come up with a plan to help those handful of franchises. That's not what our issue is. Our issue is we're paying too much as a league to the players as a whole. This is not a four or five team issue, and that's what the Players Association would want you to believe.
Let me ask you, Bill. In 2004, 2005, the perception out there was greedy players. We didn't have as much social media as we do today. The perception I've gotten anyways is that you guys are obviously not as favorable to the fans as you were in 2005, 2006. I think you guys are getting killed in the Twitter world. But
not killed, but it's certainly more balanced.
Oh, no. I think it's more pro-player than it is ownership right now. At least that's my perception. Do you guys keep an eye on that? Do you watch it? Does it bother you in any way?
Sure, we're aware of it. And sure, it's important for us to give our message and what we're trying to accomplish to our fans and to our business partners, because they're our constituents. But ultimately, we have to negotiate a deal that's going to work for the league. So that's going to be what it will be.
Can you explain this to me? Gary stands up at the press conference and says there's a 7% swing. We're 7%. There's a 7% difference. We want 7% back. And the other guy, Donald Fehr, stands up and says, there's a 17.5% swing. So I'm sitting there, and I'm not a very smart guy, but if one guy says there's a 7% swing, and another guy in an hour earlier says there's a 17.5% swing,
can't
you both say there's a 7%?
How can you negotiate? How can you guys negotiate when you guys can't figure out the numbers?
Believe me, I think we have a pretty good handle on the numbers. Maybe the question should be posed to Donald.
Because it's idiotic.
Because I think his math is misleading.
Okay, yeah. So
thank you.
So there's an issue in itself. You guys can't figure out the math.
But it's not an issue. It's a public relations...
but your figures are different, Bill.
Stance.
They're different.
No, they're not different.
They're not different.
Nick. They're
How
not
can
different.
They be different.
He's measuring something differently. And then I would argue in a very misleading way.
So behind in your sessions, are the numbers the same?
Of course.
Okay. His numbers publicly are different than the numbers,
the ways he wants to characterize the difference.
Okay. So Bill, you're a really smart guy and you're a great negotiator. I know that because I've watched and I've listened.
Well, there were some loopholes in 2006.
Dumb loopholes.
So listen, you're a smart negotiator. There's a 7% problem. How complicated is it between the two groups to fix a 7% problem.
Shouldn't that be very complicated.
When there's $3.3 billion to deal with and you've got a 7% problem,
are you implying they wanted a lockout?
It shouldn't be very complicated.
Thank
no, you. No, what I can say, though, is we've gotten one proposal this summer. That was on August 14th, and they haven't moved from that proposal since. Not a single dollar in our direction.
What's your gut? How long does this thing go?
I'm not in the handicapping business, hopefully not long.
Thank you very much. Very enlightening.
My pleasure.
It was
not
good.
Not really.
It was great. No, it was really... It was good.
No, it's...
But you can fix a 7% problem.
Sucky we are where we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Agree with that.